Wednesday, January 27th. It was not a good night. An old enemy returned. Lyndon sweated down two or three pairs of pajamas, a symptom of illnesses all the time I've known him, so I should have expected it. It was a day of office work with me. With Liz in the morning, we was gathered together. A splendid notebook on the beautification project. A sort of a mother hubbard with memos and newspaper articles covering the field. And then lunch with Lyndon and Linda and Abe and Clark. I reminded Clark to please get for me the papers that set up the libraries of two or three of the presidents, Truman's for sure, and Kennedy's and Roosevelt's, if possible. The day was interlaced with working on income tax, and I promised to myself that somewhere in my office I'm going to have an accountant. With Ashton sick, my bookkeeping is a shambles. In the afternoon, I had a meeting with Bess. We talked about a raise for her, which she needs and deserves more than anybody in my entire staff, and has worked for more than a year with only a minor reference to it, and a raise that in no way brought her close to the same salary paid Mrs. Kennedy's two social secretaries. Today was a day of two major decisions for Lyndon. One, not to go to London, which he announced at a 5:30 press conference in his bedroom to a small group of newspaper men, simply saying that the doctors had warned him against going on the theory that I am susceptible to reinfection. So he was naming Dean Rusk, the Chief Justice, and Ambassador Bruce. The other great decision was to name Acting Attorney General Nick Katzenbach as his Attorney General. At the same time, he named Ramsey Clark as Deputy Attorney General, which, to me, is the next best thing. There is no doubt that Katzenbach is able, that he's handled civil rights well. He will ride out some of the storms now brewing, drawing less lightning than any of the other people we've considered. He is a Bobby Kennedy man from the beginning. That will be a hard blow to some of the closest Johnson people. Lyndon called him and asked him to bring his wife and come over for a drink, and he arrived a little past 7. The day was full of family news, too. It appears that Lucy, on her own, had given an interview to a Chilean newspaper woman who sold it to Ebony. A long article, complete with many pictures, came out in Ebony, and a summary of it on the wire services in Washington papers, in which she had such juicy bits at explaining that her father's become quite economical since he became the president. He is terrible about spending. If a member of the family really needs 800 bulbs burning in a room in order to study better or to read or to do something useful, he wouldn't care, she said, but needless expense annoys him. Therefore, anyone in the family who leaves a light burning is fined $1. She also gave her own ideas about youth, race, her family, love, and politics. About race, the problem will be solved only when niggers are neither loved, hated, nor accepted, but rather by a natural and intimate living together without any intellectual or emotional effort made to forget color. And then she added, rather delightfully, that she did not want to sound like a well-fed preacher sitting in the White House. She told about how she wanted to become a nurse, that she'd almost burned down the White House the first night she slept there by lighting a fire in the fireplace when she really didn't know how. And then she gave a really too intimate, but very accurate, I believe, psychoanalysis of her relation to politics. She said she'd formerly thought of it as the most despicable, lowest, and most compromising activity in the world. But the assassination of President Kennedy changed her feelings. It used to be that politics had isolated her from her family. Her father didn't come home for supper at 6 o'clock, like most fathers. Her mother didn't have enough time to spend with her little girl. But then, after the assassination, she'd come to understand her father better, his commitment, his giving for the life of public service, and she'd decide that she wanted to join in the commitment, too. So that was when her political life of campaigning, trips, and speeches began. And as she expressed it, she became integrated into the life of this reunited community in the White House. Sometimes Lucy reminds me of Christopher Robin, and the look in his eyes seemed to say to the skies, now how to amuse them today? Every day, something new with Lucy. She's a lark, a sprite, an imp, and you might as well try to bottle sunshine as to suppress her. Tonight, she baked a cake about 8 inches high, four layers with lemon filling in between and soft, fluffy 7-minute icing. This was for Pop's birthday. She came out proudly displaying it to the Katzenbachs and to her daddy, who in his pajamas had come to sit with us in the West Hall while he talked to the Katzenbachs about his decision to ask him to become Attorney General. My poor dear Linda came in to get me. I could see that she'd been crying. When she saw that we had company, she left hurriedly. I went to talk to her. She is not sure that she is ready to marry anyone. I want her to have the world, to taste it all, before she decides on the one. We had a long and interesting evening with the Katzenbachs. I guess the gist of it is that I must say I respect him. I do not feel close to either one of them. We are poles apart. He and Lyndon discussed the imperative need to make of Washington a law-abiding city and how to go about it.